you're listening to the Crazy Over 40s Live podcast, a podcast designed to revolutionize the way we think about our midlife. Yes, let's celebrate this beauty of this transformative period. It's time to embrace our curiosity and unleash our desires and rediscover the power of our adolescence. Yes, we're doing it all over again. I promise you, on every episode, we shall be exploring everything from relationships, emotional well-being, sexual empowerment, to financial stability, just overall wellness. Each episode is packed with empowering insights, actionable advice, and heartfelt stories from real people who have conquered the challenges of the midlife. Expect tears, laughter, and joy. So join me every Thursday, Caroline Brown. And don't forget to share and subscribe so you can keep updated on all the episodes as and when they become available. Available on all platforms. Listen in to the next episode. Who said that over 40s was all about fun? Yes, we do have burnt out. We do have burnt out in the over 40s. We shall be exploring the issue of burnt out, which often affects everyone, really, including the under 40s, but the over 40s in particular. Why? Because in this stage of life, we shall be seeing how the stresses of work commitment, lifestyle commitment, relationship commitment, whether it's with an intimate partner, whether it's with your children, all can become a little bit too much. Yeah, we want to feel that we are going through a time of deep reflection and personal growth. And I think part of personal growth is acknowledging when you are burning out. Well, my guest today has a unique solution to address these challenges faced by us conscientious over 40s, the Crazy Over 40s Life listeners, who are in pursuit of our personal and professional development. She has developed a 10-week program called the Uptrain Brain Program, which focuses on all the aspects of the things that I have just mentioned. And this program is designed to empower you, listeness, by harnessing the power of psychology. She's a chartered psychologist, and she shall be integrating it with career training, ultimately leading to a more fulfilling and rewarding life. So get ready here on the Crazy Over 40s Life. We shall be joined by Dr. Jill Williams. She shall be here over the Crazy Over 40s Life listening podcast episode today. And don't go anywhere. Come back and get a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, a glass of wine, whatever you need to do in order to get a bit more relaxed and get into this episode. Please do that. Perhaps you don't need anything. Your energy is just enough. Whatever you prefer, come back to the Crazy Over 40s Live podcast after the interlude. I'm your host, Caroline Brown. Like always, don't forget to share. We want to grow this Crazy Over 40s Live family, and subscribe so you can keep updated on all the episodes as and when they become available. Listeners, as I said to you before, we shall be joined by Jill Williams. Hello, Jill.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Jill. I can see you're sounding well.
Oh, yes, I am. Thank you.
Just as well, isn't it? Because we're going to do some rethinking, some of the things that you do. I know that you are a chartered psychologist. And you have this wonderful program that you're doing, which we will get into a little bit later. But tell us a little bit more about the work that you do and how it can benefit the over 40s.
Okay, well, I've been seeing clients on a one-to-one basis as a mental health therapist and psychologist for a fair while now. And I was finding there was a certain sort of group of people I was seeing quite often. And very often they were self-employed people, actually, because they're often the people that drive themselves the hardest.
Yes.
That were just feeling, well, utterly broken. And this was before we even were talking very much about this term of burnout. So, you know, and I was finding I was also having to turn away a lot of people because I was often too heavily booked to help them. So what I've put together is a hybrid program, which is part flexible learning, few sessions with me, looking at, helping with work stress, building confidence, avoiding or recovering from burnout. And that's, I think, particularly relevant to the 40s, over 40s, because we know it's people in their 40s that are most likely to burn out, actually.
Yeah. A lot of people burning out. I know burnout can look like a kind of like a depression, can't it?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that. And how do people recognize the difference between a burnout and a depression, but all of them before it gets to a slippery, dark slope where you just feel there's no way out, you feel hopeless?
Yes, and I think that's the problem, actually. Very often burnout can creep up on us. You know, it tends to affect the most conscientious workers. They're the people that are most likely to ignore the signs and keep pushing through. Yeah. And burnout can turn into depression, but it's not the same thing initially. But we know that it can have some of the same symptoms, but they tend to be more focused around work initially. And then if it starts to become more all-consuming, it starts to leak out and sort of affect your life more generally. And then it can become more of a general depression. But the signs really, first of all, it's that just feeling more negative about work, more cynical somehow, and just having lots of negative feelings, feeling less competent, being less productive. A lot of the time people find their concentration is going, and then in order to cope with that, they then work more hours or they work harder to try and compensate. And of course, then they get in this vicious circle where they're just kind of spiraling, getting more and more exhausted, putting in more effort for less return. So it's that feeling exhausted and stress that's just not going away when you're outside of work, feeling very negative towards work as well, and just quite cynical. Yeah. So I think they're the kind of the main signs to look out for.
Yeah. And just I want to ask you, actually, I'm not sure whether you've had a lot of clients who have who are neurodivergent, and whether you find that the strive for perfectionism because they want to spend most of the time masking. And that can lead to a lot of burnt out. Do you have experience of that?
Yes, indeed. You do find it. And of course, there's a lot of people that are only recently starting to think, oh, maybe I'm sort of on the spectrum with ADHD, or maybe I've got some autistic tendencies there. And of course, they may have never realized really that they're working harder than your average person just to appear sort of typical, if you like, or not to stand out or to cope with the usual pressures.
That sounds to me, working with clients who do, that's one of the things that they do struggle with, that are masking, and also that the pressure that comes with like having extra responsibilities as times go on in your life, isn't it? And you're juggling it all, and what you were able to do before you're not able to do at that same level. And is it okay? When is it okay to kind of say, okay, like I need to take a step back without it impacting on your ego?
And that can be really difficult, I think, and it's thought to be the reason why people tend to burn out most likely to burn out in their 40s, because they're perhaps still approaching life with that vigor you had when you first started your career and you were trying to impress and you were throwing everything into it, except now you're not in your 20s, you don't perhaps have the same energy levels. And you might have a life outside work, which is a lot bigger, where you've got family responsibilities and lots of other things going on. And so it's not really realistic to expect to be able to work at that same level where you're always, always giving 100%, and that's okay to not be absolutely flogging yourself every day, because that's not really a healthy position for anyone to be able to do. You can do it for a short while, but it will catch up with you. It's not really a sustainable, healthy work life, way to be.
Yeah, it's not. And some of the, you spoke about some of the signs. We talked about the emotional signs. Yeah. When you have a family and you are feeling burnt out, you don't have enough energy for your work, let alone for your relationship and relationships with your children. What is that like for someone? How does someone say, like, I can't do this, without the kind of the shame and possibly the guilt that comes along with that, thinking they should be doing something and they can't?
I know, and I think that's really hard, especially if that's just the way you've always been. But I think it's about remembering, first of all, I mean, first of all, I'll say that any stress outside work will make it more likely that you'll burn out with relation to work, whether that's being neurodivergent or whether that's, you know, not getting sleep because you've got a young family or having other caring responsibilities. Everything will kind of add to that stress pile, if you like. And I think it can be really difficult when people have always been a certain way and that's what they've kind of built their self-esteem on very often. You know, very often work is such a big part of how we build our identity and our self-esteem. But what I will say to people is it gets easier. If you have to start doing small things to take care of yourself that you never had to do, whether that's setting better boundaries or saying no more often or, you know, requesting time where you're undisturbed to get on with bigger projects, you know, it will feel uncomfortable at first because it's something you've never done, but that doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. And actually, if you persevere, it does get easier. You know, just take a small step, let yourself get used to that, take another small step.
Right, take a small step. And is it worthwhile actually sharing how people like your family members or friends can actually identify, you know, someone who is going through possible burnout? What other things can we look out, you know, looking out for each other?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, actually, because I think very often, if we were to, you know, I've been there myself, actually. I burnt out in my 40s.
Yeah.
And I know that actually if I'd have seen those signs in somebody else, I'd be saying, mate, what are you doing to yourself? You know, I'd call it out instantly.
Yeah,
and
we should. Oh,
we're not daft. But, you know, somehow for ourselves, we hold ourselves to these higher standards, don't we? And it's something that I had to adjust to as well. And it was really difficult. But signs we can look out for, I think, is when, you know, you're not able to leave work at work. Is probably a key sign, isn't it? You're not able to turn off in the evenings.
Okay.
Maybe you're finding you're working later and later to try and keep up. You know, your sleep's getting disturbed. You're starting to maybe get some physical symptoms of just feeling more achy, having sort of IBS or indigestion, or your concentration is going and you're getting more irritable. I think we can tell when the people around us just aren't quite themselves.
Right.
That we have people working ever harder, but not feeling better for it, you know, feeling worse and worse.
So looking out for like the physical signs, as you talked about, like lowered immunity, sleep habits. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, I think we all have our thing that tends to crop up when we're feeling a bit stressed, whether it's migraines for somebody or stomach upsets for somebody or sleep for somebody else. You know, and when you start to notice those symptoms that aren't just there for a day or two, but are becoming more of a regular thing, that's a sign really that you might be trying to push through in your brain, but your body's saying, no, this isn't working for us. And it's trying to force you to slow down, really.
Yes, forcing you to slow down. And one of the things that I think people instantly are kind of know really is the behavioral signs, right? If you're kind of people using food or using alcohol.
Yeah, absolutely. That's quite a key sign, actually, kind of using alcohol or, you know, at first it could just be sort of over-the-counter medications, sort of sleep aids. But then when they become more of a regular thing rather than a one-off, I mean, I think we all know that, or a lot of us know that feeling of going home after a more stressful day at work and thinking, oh, I just fancy a takeaway and a glass of wine tonight. You know, but when that is becoming something you need to keep you going, rather than just the occasional thing, then that's not a good sign and that's not really sustainable.
Yeah. And I wanted to talk about men and burnt out, because I think when it comes to gender, there's different societal expectations, I think. You know, because I'm just talking it stereotypically. When a man is burnt out from work, well, he's seen, you know, back in the day as the provider, we're talking about the over 40s. So back in the day, he was seen as the provider, and that still is the case in many situations where some women choose to stay back, you know, and sometimes they're kind of forced to because of financial reasons. Someone has to take the responsibility and provide, and the other person stays at home for a little while. But when that other person who's out there doing that gender, you know, men, how hard does it hit on the ego where they're not even able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we've got any research specifically that's looked at that kind of low self-esteem in men, particularly in burnout, but I am, you know, I do see it myself, you know, and yeah, I think it's a really tough thing, like you say, because that those stereotypes die hard, you know, and we do still often see, you know, very often it is the mum that may stay home or delay things a bit or take the long maternity leave for young children. And then that onus is on the man as well. And I think it's harder for them as well to perhaps share in the workplace if they're feeling stressed. And actually, you know, one of the first things I would say to somebody if they were starting to struggle with burnout or kind of continual stress at work is to think about whether there's somebody they trust in work they feel they could share that with. Because we know that very often people will feel like they're alone. But actually, when they start to kind of hint at it or share at it, they'll find out that other people at work are feeling exactly the same. And that can be quite validating. But I think it's a harder environment often for men to be able to bring that up without it feeling like weakness.
Yeah, very good point you're making there. And also the same with women, as you pointed out, you know, women, because there is a pressure on those who stay at home, and normally it's the mum, there is a pressure to think that, oh, she should be able to juggle it all at home. And sometimes she's feeling very burnt out and frustrated. Yeah. I know that. How can their partner kind of reassure them through some of those challenging experiences, and rightly so, because there's a lot going at home. It's not the easiest thing to do, to be at home with your baby or with your young children. It's not the easiest job. There's lots of jobs, isn't it, on top of that. Yeah,
absolutely. It's a kind of a 24-hour day job, isn't it, with no sick time off and no holiday and no guaranteed sleep. No, it's a tough one, and again, that's somewhere I've been as well. And I think what I would always encourage people to do, you know, for themselves, actually, you know, other people that might, you know, remind them as well, but for themselves, is to think about, you know, we're so hard on ourselves sometimes, we're so self-critical every time, you know, especially mum, especially when we think we're not being a good enough mum, and that comes up so often, you know, we're just relentlessly guilty, I think, as mums, wondering if we should be doing something better. And it's never been a harder age, I think, now. We have all this information on the internet, but we have all these conflicting views and all these kind of airbrushed images of what motherhood should be like, if you like, on Instagram. And it's just whatever kind of plan you're taking, you can guarantee there'll be somebody out there that thinks it's the wrong one. So I think it's really hard when you're comparing yourself as well out there. But what I would always say to somebody is try and think about what you would say to somebody else in your exact same situation.
Right. Yes.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. If you had a friend that was going through maybe what you're going through, maybe you're not getting enough sleep, maybe your baby has colic and screams every evening for hours, maybe you're going through toddler tantrums where you just can't even get to a supermarket, whatever it is. If you had a friend that was going through that, I imagine rather than going, oh, my God, why aren't you coping better? Why aren't you doing better? I'm sure you'd be saying things like, well, you know, motherhood is hard. These little people don't come with a guidebook. You are trying your absolute best and you are not the only one that's struggling, and stay with it and have faith in yourself. You'd be saying these kind of supportive things and you would mean them. You wouldn't be kind of, you know, bullshitting them. You would be, you know, you saying what you thought, and try and remember what you would say to other people and try and give yourself a little bit of that more realistic sort of advice and support.
Yeah, definitely. I will say to any mother out there, don't pay attention to these women on social media who have their hair done, got a chocolate bar in one hand, working out on, you know, in the gym, and got the baby in the other. Oh. It's just not real life. You know, take the time. You know, hormonally, you're guided by your emotions anyway. So just be a bit more compassionate, self-compassion. And let's talk about the self-compassion, because I know that the work that you do, tell us exactly what that involves. And we can go from there, really, about how it can meet my audience, my listeners' needs, and the way that you work, and globally or online or in person.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, self-compassion is something I do a lot of work with. I also use a lot of cognitive behavior therapy, which is the therapy for which there's a lot of evidence. It's seen as the gold standard for many things. But there's also a view, actually, that if you go straight in with cognitive behavior therapy, which is a therapy where you're looking at people's thoughts and at their beliefs and feelings and their behavior, and you're looking at how all this intertwines. And a lot of it involves kind of looking at people's thoughts and getting them to notice it and challenge that. But we know that actually with some people that are very high in self-criticism, you know, maybe they've been like that since they were a child, and maybe for good reason, you know, maybe that's kind of something to do with trying to protect themselves when they had a disruptive childhood or had very critical parenting. But we know that if you sometimes go straight in with CBT, with people with high self-criticism, they will almost use it as another stick to beat themselves with, if you like. Oh, why am I having these thoughts? Why can't I get past this? So I do a lot of something called compassion-focused therapy, okay, which is something devised by Professor Paul Gilbert in response to, he saw a lot of people that he was working with, well, not a lot, but there is a significant minority, shall we say, of people that don't respond very well to CBT. And he started looking into why this was, found out it was because they had lots of self-criticism, and the voice they were talking to in their head was just horribly kind of dismissive and upsetting. And so he found that you have to get past that first. So that's work I do. And it's about, you know, first of all, I'll get people to notice what's going through their head. And sometimes people won't even really think about how much they beat themselves up over tiny mistakes. And I've had people come back into my office and go, oh, my God, I can't even tell you how I speak to myself. It's full of expletives. You know, it's just horrible. I would never speak to anyone that way. So first of all, it's about getting people to notice it. And then it's about getting people to think about, OK, what purpose do I think this serves for me? Because like with all behaviours, for it to keep going, there must be some belief somewhere that this is doing you some good. So some people will say things like, well, it keeps me on my toes, or it keeps me motivated, or stops me being a bit of a jerk. You know, it keeps me accountable. But actually, then I get them to think about, OK, well, is that how you speak to other people then, when you want to, you know, do the right thing by them? And they'll go, oh, well, no. And then you can say, well, why not? And then you realise, well, actually, you know, if I talk to other people the way I talk to myself, it would just be devastating for them. And you get them to think about, OK, so, and you think this is going to do differently for you. You know, it's almost like saying, well, I need to work for a really critical and over demanding boss, and that's how you'll get the best out of me. It's like, well, I don't think that's true. So it's not about being soft. It's about being aware of how you speak to yourself, and just about being more realistic. OK, and it's about recognizing as well that if you talk to yourself in a more supportive way, you are going to be more motivated. So if there are things you do wrong, and there will be with all of us, then you are more likely to address that and be motivated to change if you talk to yourself in a more supportive way. Whereas if you're somebody that beats yourself up all the time, you will probably end up just fueling anxiety and low mood, and end up in a place where you've got no motivation to do anything because you'll feel so low. So it's realizing that it's actually the healthier and the more productive way forward. It's not just about being soft.
Yeah, not being soft. And we're living in a very difficult time. You know, we're a sandwich generation, you know, people taking care of an aging population as well as their own family and so on. So it's difficult. So as you're describing, you're talking about the work-related causes of burnout, lifestyle and personality traits as well, and just the way that you are. You know, we talked about neurodivergent. Tell us, do you work globally in person?
Yes, I work across the UK. The program I'm working on at the moment is a 10-week program. I call it the Uptrained Brain program because I want people to see it almost as the natural addition to any training, you know, to be able, it's that understanding of ourselves and the way we work that we don't really get when we train for a career, but it really is the cherry on the top that keeps you healthy and enjoying work. You know, so it's a 10-week program where you get three decent individual sessions with me, group online Q&A sessions every week for support as well, and flexible online learning that you can do at a time that suits you.
Do you think it's easier, what you're offering, so what you're saying to me, it's good to get ahead, really, if you can, or kind of get to a coaching session like, or group, or a program like this, so you can kind of, like, it's like maintain, isn't it? It's maintaining your health, isn't it?
I mean, I see it as it's very much something that would help people with burnout who have gone too far down the path of work stress than they'd like. But I also kind of like to see it, well, I know it's something that I think every professional would benefit from. You know, it's almost like putting those good foundations in so that when harder times do hit, you've got, you know, the best skills to cope. Or if you find yourself in a toxic workplace, you know, which isn't your fault, and that is responsible for an awful lot of burnout, but you're able to control what you can control about that.
Yeah. No, that's why I wanted to kind of go into that a little bit, because I think that we know we live in a time that's quite stressful, as you pointed out, in different areas in our lives. And it's always healthy to have some anticipatory kind of coping skills, which is always helpful, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So any lasting words for my listeners that you would like to share, and more about details about where they can get hold of you?
Yes, I mean, first of all, I'd say remember that, you know, the work may seem never ending, but your energy is not, you know, and you are worth looking after. If you were a machine in a factory and that workplace production was integral on this machine, you would make damn sure that machine was getting serviced and was working well, you know, and it's the same with you. You put more into yourself, you will get more out, actually. But sometimes we get caught in this vicious circle of working ever harder with poor concentration, you know, and getting less out. So it's about recognizing that cycle, I would say. And also, if they want to have a look, I've also got some free resources on my website as well. I've got blogs about symptoms, causes, and I've got a free PDF on recovery from burnout. I've got my own story as well of how I burnt out when I was working in academia 10 years ago as well. So the website is, and this is where I realized I need to work a bit faster on getting a more snappy title going. It's www.rethinktherapyconwy, and that's the Conwy is my town in North Wales, spelled C-O-N-W-Y. So that's rethinktherapyconwy.com. And on there, you will see, that's just the main page. You will see there's blogs on there, and that's where you'll find the free resources. And you will also see the program, which is called the Uptrained Brain Program. And at the moment, I'm taking people on to start next month. And that's it's an introductory price at the moment. So while this is work I do day in, day out in my office, the hybrid program is fairly new. So as such, it's at a half price offer at the moment for bookings taken before March.
Well, you heard that. So it's Rethink Therapy Conwy, conwy.com. And as she said, Jill, Dr. Jill, she has Upbrain course on the website. He also has coaching, therapy, contact, feedback. She's got a lovely blog there. Thank you so much for coming on the Praise Over 40s Live podcast. Thank you for having me.
And if anybody ever wants to talk to me, I always offer a free 1-hour call just to discuss their needs. And I don't do sales pressure because I hate it. So don't worry about that. Just a chance to discuss what you need and whether I could help.
Lovely. Well, you've heard it from Dr. Jill Williams. Thank you very much for coming on the Praise Over 40s Live podcast.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Caroline.
Jill Williams left her details. You can get hold of all my guests as always, Instagram, Facebook, Gmail, the crazyoverfortieslife.com website. We have access to blogs, books, journals, and the latest podcast episodes, as well as external episode recordings that I have contributed to. Right, we shall be back on the next episode of the Crazy Over 40s Life podcast every Thursday, 8 a.m. GMT time. And don't forget to share and subscribe so you can get updated on all the episodes as and when they become available. I'm your host, Caroline Brown.